Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 335 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is September 1st, 2015. We've got a big show for you this week on the Peristyle Podcast. We got USC Hall of Famer Ronnie Lott joins the show. We got Coach Hartley Hyde. We got USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber talking all about USC's 52-13 win over Fresno State. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Podcast at USCFootball.com is our email address, or you can call us at 206-888-6755. That's the voicemail number. You can call us there, or you go to peristylepodcast.com. Leave us a voicemail right on the left side of the page. All right, well, let's jump right into it. All right, we're welcoming to the show USC, former USC Trojan great. He's a College Football Hall of Famer. He's an NFL Hall of Famer. He's a national champion at college. He's a Super Bowl champion in the NFL. You can follow him on Twitter, at Ronnie Lott, H-O-F, for Hall of Fame. So that's pretty cool if you can have a Twitter handle like that. Ronnie Lott's joining the show. What's up, Ronnie? How you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great, man. It's been an exciting week. You know, it's been great to see all the things that are happening around football, and you look at pro football, and everybody's getting ready for that. There's been some, you know, obviously some interesting cuts and some interesting, you know, choices. Teams going through their difficulties. You look at college football, and I think everybody was shocked this past weekend. And the reason they were all shocked, everybody expected certain things to happen. Everybody was looking for teams to dominate. And yet we came out of this with a lot of questions. And I think we came out of with a lot of questions trying to figure out, are these teams as good as they say they are, and are teams going to get better? And of course, looking at USC and what they were able to accomplish and the way that they played, the amount of attempts that they got on the offensive side, the way that their defense came up and played the ball, played well, tackling, the things that they were able to generate. I just think that overall there were a lot of interesting thoughts around college football.
Yeah, we wanted to pick your brain on that, and especially about USC. 105 plays, probably not something – we know it's not something you saw really in your day. But before we jump into that, I just wanted to kind of get people a feel for, you know, what you're doing now. I know you got a lot of business stuff going on. You're doing stuff for the Pac-12 networks, and you're on Twitter at Ronnie Lott, H-O-F, like I mentioned. But maybe kind of give people an update on what you've been doing lately.
Yeah, it's been fantastic, and the reason it's been fantastic is that I'm involved, obviously, with professional football locally here, been able to do some local radio and television, so that's been keeping me occupied, and then doing stuff with the Pac-12 has been phenomenal, watching them grow and incubating that business, watching Larry Scott not only take over the helm there and leading the charge, but also doing some wonderful things there, instituting a number of initiatives around college football and around college sports. I think also when you look at the Pac-12 and what they were trying to achieve in terms of being the place where champions grow and the place where champions come from, you look at all the athletes around the country and around the globe that have been a champion, that have participated in the Pac-12, and all of a sudden you realize that you got a lot of great assets, a lot of great opportunities to tell great stories about great athletes that are going to come out of those universities. And then more importantly, I think we're going to see a lot of great student athletes that are going to find themselves achieving greatness not only in their respective fields, but they're going to achieve greatness in the future. And at some point trying to find ways to enhance, you know, different businesses and different arenas. And I think one of the things that's great and one of the things that I feel like I learned coming out of USC is that no matter what, you got to learn how to compete and you got to learn how to give it your best. And so I've applied that even today. You know, I have a number of businesses that I'm involved with, and we always, you know, are trying to compete. We're trying to get better. We're trying to do things to make the world better. And then lastly, I think the one thing that I'm really excited about is 25 years that we've had our foundation, All Stars Helping Kids, and we've been able to give back to this community in so many different ways. And heading up that initiative over the years and having a chance to participate and work with other organizations and seeing how people give is so important, and teaching young people how to give. And so I've been very blessed to be able to have 25 years of being connected to the people that you don't get a chance to hear about. We don't hear the stories of what people go through each and every day to survive, and I've had the good fortune to see it and be around it. And so, you know, you look at, you know, the one side of life of competing at the high level and being around people that are changing the world, that are entrepreneurs, but at the same time being around a nonprofit world where you see guys and people that are young ladies that are trying to find a way to get in the nonprofit world of uplifting people, giving people hope, and giving people chances. And to me, we need it on both sides. We need the nonprofit world to exist, and we need the world of the of innovation to exist. And to me, those areas are areas that I like to be around, and I find myself having a lot of peace and a lot of interesting perspectives on life, because you see people that are truly trying to change the world. On the other side, you see a lot of people that are in need, that are just looking for somebody to find a way to enhance their lives so they can have a piece of what we all want, and that's the American dream.
Well, it's great to see you coming from both sides of that. That's awesome. I know I read a bunch about you, you know, going into the interview and all the business stuff you did. I didn't know as much about the philanthropy stuff too. So that's great to hear. And I know a lot of USC fans are going to love to hear that. But they wanted to also get your opinion, Ronnie, about what this USC team is doing. People want to know how, you know, involved you were with the team, or how much you follow the team, and if you watch the games, and kind of get your thoughts, and maybe kind of give people a little a rundown of what you do as far as following the team, and then what you thought of the game on Saturday.
Well, first of all, I've had the good fortunes of playing at USC and playing with some terrific athletes, playing with Anthony Munoz, who I competed against in high school, and knowing him and playing with some of the other greats, and playing with Clay Matthews and playing with Bruce Matthews and playing with some of the other greats like Marcus Allen, who was one of my best friends, and having a chance to hear his, you know, his thoughts on, you know, each year, well, hearing his thoughts on the game of football and the game of what's happening at USC. And so before you know it, you start to realize that the community that I'm involved with is an incredible community. You know, when it starts with the likes of John Robinson and John Steele at the university, I see him occasionally around the campus and occasionally at different sporting events. And then, of course, the great Pat Hayden, who was a stellar quarterback at USC and then went on to play in professional ranks, was a Rhodes Scholar. He's done a terrific job of creating a positive environment at USC right now, where he's taken over from Mike Garrett. And so all of a sudden you see that these attributes that have been around the family and have been around the core of who I am, you realize that there's some great attributes and great characteristics. And as John would say, Coach Robinson would say a number of times, it's how you compete, it's how you live your life, it's the way you go about it, it's the way that you do and demonstrate your ability to be a champion. And so to me, when I'm around USC and being around it and cheering for it and watching Coach Sarkisian do his job right now, watching what he was able to accomplish, taking over for Coach O, after Coach O had done a terrific job of finishing the season, and looking at some of the young players, which I had a chance to see this past weekend, Juju Smith, and just seeing some of the other athletes that are, you know, Aguilar and all the guys that are, you know, talented on both sides, and looking for at Cravens and looking at all the great talent we have, and what I find is I'm always looking for the guy who's got the edge, the guy who is, is giving just a little bit more. And to me, one of the great positions that we don't talk a lot about at USC, and one of the things that, I'm excited about is the quarterback position. I mean, we talk about Pat. We can talk about Hurdle. We can talk about Paul McDonald. We can talk about a lot of great quarterbacks that I had a chance to play with. And we can see Matt Leinart now is with the Pac-12 Network and seeing some of the great quarterbacks that have played and Carson Palmer and all of those guys. And then here we are looking at Cody Kessler. And I think with the way that he, when you think about running that many plays, the concentration to be able to get that many plays off says that the young man is in it. And not only is he in it, but he understands what the capacity of what these guys are capable of doing. And just being able to get that many plays off, we forget about that. It's not a matter if you are able to win or lose. It's a matter of execution. It's a matter of knowing that people can get out and play with the type of characteristics that you need to play with. So for me, watching the game and rooting for the SC and knowing that, SC has been a big part of my life and will continue to be. I've traveled all over the world, and it's fascinating to me that I can travel all over the world and find a Trojan fan and find somebody who will tell me, fight on. And what you find out is that there are people who are very passionate about USC, who care a lot about USC, and care a lot about the USC football team. And so we're indebted to the guys that are playing right now, and I know Coach Shark is got to be excited. They did a great job of running that many plays, but also being able to show people that they've come a long ways. I know he's instituted a lot in terms of discipline, and yet they still have a long ways to go. Big game this week, though. Big, big game. So, yeah, that's a lot for me to be proud of. It's a lot for me to talk about. But I'm very excited about being a fan of USC and being an alum of USC.
Yeah, they're coming up to your neck of the woods to play Stanford that second game. But, yeah, so far, Steve Sarkisian, pretty good job. You mentioned Marcus Allen. We talked to him on this show before, and he was a big Ed Orgeron fan. We're going to definitely try to get him on the show again and ask him what he thinks of Steve Sarkisian. But I didn't know if you were a big Orgeron guy and what you thought when they hired Sarkisian. And so far, it seems like it's working out okay.
Well, you got to remember, there's always somebody that you're going to love and somebody you're going to hate, somebody you think that's got better skills, somebody that's got this and somebody's got that. What you got to find out, which I think is one of the things that we don't get a chance to do a lot of times, is find out what's in the blood of that person, what's in the soul of that person, what's in the gut of that person, and right away when you're around Coach Sarkisian, you see that he's when you cut him, if you had to cut him in the middle, you would see that he bleeds USC, and even though he went up to Washington, and even though he did a fantastic job up there, getting that program going in the right direction, putting that program in a position that they can go to, bowl games, putting that team in a position where they had a chance to fight for the Pac-12 North. And yet he was here, and he was a part of USC. He will tell you that some of the things that he learned from Pete Carroll and that staff and being around it, that there were some, great memories. He would tell you that he and Lane Kiffin and the journeys that they had being young assistants, that both of them had, high hopes of achieving a lot of things. He would also say that they're friends and people that would say why, and he would say, look, because that was my guy. That was the guy that I believed in. At the same time, he would also tell you that he's a guy that wants to win at the highest level. He wants to be great. He wants to follow in the shoes of some of the greats. He wants to follow and be, mentioned with Pete and mentioned with, other great coaches. So, for me, that I know. What he's got to do is he's got to go out and coach.
Yeah.
He's got to coach at a high level. He's got to execute at a high level. He's got to find guys that are going to play at a passionate level. He's got to be able to call them out. He's got to be able to inspire them. And I think one of the things that we saw here early on is that you can have crisis and yet you can have functionality. And he had crisis last week. He had a couple people saying things, and yet they were functional. They played well. They played within themselves. And to me, that's a sign of a leader. And Marcus and I were talking about it. I had other alums that I reached out to that just to kind of hear their perspective on it. And so, you know, all of a sudden, you look at Coach Sark, and what we're going to see in this game especially, this is going to be a tough game. This game is going to be a game for him where I think it's going to be really challenging for him. It's going to be really very, very challenging. It's going to be very challenging. The reason why, anytime you go on the road and you got to compete against Stanford, you're going to have a lot to deal with. So he's going to come up here. It's going to be a hostile environment. Stanford, the way that they played a game of football, that way that David Shaw and how he coaches the game, is going to make the game a kind of a short game. So it's not going to be, they're not going to be able to get that many plays off. So you kind of know that they're going to maybe get 70 at the most, if possible. So he's not going to allow them to dominate the game and keep it, the tempo up. So all of a sudden, we're going to have a shorter game, and he's got to win. He's got to win in that environment, and he's got to not only win in that environment, but he's got to find a way to make sure that these guys understand that, okay, we're going to have less plays, but how do we win each play? How do we win each play, and how do we not get knocked off the ball? How do we find ourselves holding our ground? And to me, that if you can get that done, that's going to be exciting football this upcoming weekend. But he's got a lot ahead of him in a very short week.
He certainly does. All right, we're talking to the pride of Eisenhower High School in Rialto, California, Ronnie Lott. You can follow him on Twitter at Ronnie Lott, HOF, Ronnie Lott Hall of Fame. Ronnie, we had some questions on the Peristyle, our message board on uscfootball.com that people posed. If we could, I know it's Labor Day, we want to let you go, but there's a few questions here, if you don't mind jumping in on a couple of these.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, let's go to Rick Raff. He wrote in, he said, who impresses you in our secondary? So he's talking about the USC secondary. Anyone impress you?
I mean, look, you know, the one young man that went through what he went through and went through a challenging situation is a young man that I like, and it's a young man that I can't wait to see him play. And Shaw is a young man that, you know, going into the season, he was going to be the captain. Everybody knows his ability to compete, the way he thought about playing the game, the way that he goes about his craft and understanding the game. So, for me, I was looking forward to it. Am I disappointed? Of course I'm disappointed that he went through what he went through. I'm disappointed that he felt that he had to make the decisions that he made. On the other side, he was somebody that I was looking forward to watching, somebody that I know that has the right characteristics to play at the next level. Also is a person that I think will, you know, learn from this and grow from it and will be better for it. You know, the hard part about life is when we make decisions, you know, sometimes we don't understand the magnitude of them. We don't realize that they can be bigger than us. And in this case, it was bigger than him. And I hope that he learns from this. I know that he will. I think he'll be a better football player, a better person for it. And yet we have to find ways as alums and as people who enjoy the game of football that root for him, you know, hopefully that he gets the best out of everything that he can do in the game of football. And if he can, it's going to make all of us better, because what we do need is people that can rebound. What we do need is to see people that are heroes, that can have adversity in their lives and then find a way to get better. So, yeah, we can look at it, you know, negatively, or we can look at it positively. And right now, I believe we can look at it positively, because what we got to do is hopefully look at him and say to ourselves, that young man can recover from all this. He's going to be better for it, and he's going to be a better student athlete.
Oh, yeah, Steve Sarkisian did say that he could come back. A lot of factors will go into that, so we'll keep following that for sure. But it'll be interesting to see if Josh Shaw can make it back, because he was a great leader on this team and very popular player, so we'll see what happens there. Pete Pauly wrote in. He wanted to know what changes you would make to the USC defensive backfield, if you would make any?
Well, that's an interesting question because, you know, when you think about the backfield, everybody's always trying to find ways to enhance the backfield. A lot of times we find ourselves trying to think that certain players can move around and play certain positions. I like the way the secondary fits right now. I like the way Cravens and what he's doing. I like the way the guys are playing and coming together. I think the hard part about being in the secondary is getting guys to play as they're tied together. When I was in pro football, one of the things that our coach would preach is, can we all make sure that everybody's tied together? Are we all playing with the right alignment? Are we all lining up a certain way? Are we all knowing what we each have to do back there? Because once you get one guy out of alignment, it then breaks down and it hurts all the guys. So for me, just knowing what I know, that's a very key point for Coach Wilcox in his way of coaching football, especially coaching football in the Pac-12. You cannot have breakdowns. You cannot have long plays, explosive plays. You have to have a sound defense, and everybody's got to be on the same page.
Lambda Chi Trojan wrote in, what's the greatest game you ever played in as a Trojan?
Greatest game I ever played in as a Trojan. There were a number of great games that I played in. And, you know, I can go back to the Alabama game, and one of my great friends who passed away from ALS is Eric Scoggins. He was the player of the game against Alabama and down in Alabama, and it was a fantastic game. It was a game that a lot of people didn't think we could win. We went down there and beat them, and that was a terrific game. We went down and beat LSU. That was a terrific game. We went down and beat Tennessee. That was a terrific game. Competing against the great George Rogers. He was the Heisman Trophy candidate. We were able to play against him and had a great game. We're playing against Michigan State. And, Kirk Gibson, who ended up not playing football, but ended up going and playing baseball, having a chance to compete against him. So there are a lot of great games that I play. But I will say this, anytime you play against Montana and having an opportunity to play against him, and he almost got us. It was a terrific game. In the second half, he dominated us and was phenomenal in the second half. And yeah, we prevailed and came out and ended up kicking a field goal to win the game. Frank Jordan did a fantastic job. Paul McDonald guided us down and got us in field goal range, and we ended up winning the game. But yeah, I would say competing against Joe Montana, against a guy who in the first half we could stop him, in the second half we couldn't stop him at all. And it was a terrific moment for us because to come out a winner and then having to play against him or having to compete against him in practice and getting to know him. And so, yeah, I would say that Montana was one of the guys that we enjoyed competing against, and it was a great game for us to prevail against him.
Cool. We'll do two more quick ones for you. We'll let you go. Sammy 87 want to know, what do you think the biggest hit on an opponent that you can remember? A lot of people were actually writing in about this, about players not being able to tackle hard anymore. But is there a big hit, college or pro, that you just remember as being one of your best or biggest?
Well, I can tell you right now, hitting George Rogers at USC was a great thrill. There was another kid, Dave Lewis from Cal, that, you know, was a big shot. And then in pro football, and, you know, hitting Icky Woods. I will say this. The funny thing about the game today, everybody says this, oh, we're not going to get the big hits. We're not seeing all that. We're not seeing the things the guys used to do. But trust me, I watched a lot of football this past weekend. There were some incredible hits. There was some incredible tackling. And a lot of guys were doing it the proper way, using that shoulder, picking up guys, driving them to the ground. To me, keeping the head out of the game, finding a way to wrap guys up, using your feet, getting your feet aligned so you can get in front of the guy. So just great, great football. So when I hear people saying that we're not getting guys that are not attacking, guys that are not hitting, guys that are not able to accomplish certain things, I don't know who they're. I don't know what they're watching, because I see some great hits in the game of football, and I'm definitely saw some great hits this past game with USC, and we'll continue. We'll see. We're going to see a lot of physical tackling, but we've got to get the head out of it. The key is, can you tackle and use the shoulder and wrap up and drive the opponent back? That's the key to tackling. You got to be able to wrap up, grab, use your hands, and make sure you take the guy down. Using your head, getting your head in the way, is the wrong way to play this game. And believe me, I've had a number of years playing this game. And when I did get my head in the way, that was not a good thing.
Okay, one last one. Yeah, no one. I don't know who would know better than you. One last one. SC Tets wanted to know, how would you stop today's offenses? Is there anything that defensives today can learn from the past?
Well, if I was going to look at the game today, you know, if I was going to go out and try to find ways to stop the pistol offense, to stop the options, to stop all the things that we're seeing in college football and seeing in professional football, I think what I would try to find is I would want to find guys that are more athletic, guys that could do more things, guys that can play defense lineman, play linebacker, possibly be able to drop into the secondary. I would want guys that are corners and safeties that could be interchangeable, that can do a lot of different things. I would want my safeties to be able to blitz. I would want my safeties to be able to possibly play, you know, man-to-man. So the way the game is today, if you want to win, you got to be able to match up. You got to be able to put your best five players against their best five players, especially when it comes to the passing game. So you're going to have four wide receivers. You're going to have a running back. You're going to have situations like that. But when you do have those situations, you better have five guys that can cover. And if you can have five guys that can cover and can be interchangeable and do a lot of different things, you got a chance to win a lot of football games, because getting to the quarterback, no matter what I say, no matter what I'm talking about, that is the most important thing. And SC will do that. They will do a fantastic job. I know this. Coach Wilcox is the kind of guy that will dial up a lot of different ways of being able to attack any offense in college football right now. So I'm looking forward to him and looking forward to how he is going to go about coaching football this year. But that's what you got to do today. You got to have a lot of different guys that can play a lot of different positions.
All right. Well, great stuff. The great Ronnie Lott. You can follow him on Twitter at Ronnie Lott, HOF. Thanks for joining us on this Labor Day. It was great having you on. We'd love to have you on again sometime. Thank you.
Anytime. Really enjoyed it. Fight on to all the SC Trojans out there. And college football is going to be a great year. It's going to be a lot of interesting ups and downs throughout the year.
It certainly will. Thanks again, Ronnie Lott, and everyone else. Hey, we're going to be back in a minute talking with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber about the USC-Fresno State game.
You are listening to the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to USCFootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out USCFootball.com.
It's time to get back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com.
We're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. Happy Labor Day to everyone. Happy Labor Day to you, Dan Weber, USCFootball.com beat writer. How you doing, buddy?
Doing good, and happy to be back laboring with actual football games to cover. That made last week almost worthwhile, that game.
Yeah, last week was kind of hell week for us, I guess. Usually the end of fall camp isn't so bad, but it was really, really crazy. We weren't sure about the distractions. We talked to a lot of the players and coaches about it after the game, but it, you know, you saw what happened on the field. It didn't look like the Josh Shaw and Anthony Brown stuff was much of a distraction for this team.
Well, I say this, as they all pointed out to us, if there's ever been a team in the history of the world prepared to handle Josh Shaw and Anthony Brown stories, this team was. I mean, they looked at it like, yeah, after last year, this is nothing. We know how to handle this stuff. And they clearly do and did. You know, I mean, they're amazing. And I think they point out what I think is the absolute best thing Sark and his staff have done, and Sark said it the other night after the game. They listened to these players. They figured out where they were. They understood what they'd gone through. And it was none of this, you know, my way or the highway, this is how we're doing things. They looked at these guys and said, you have to know what you're doing. You have to know how to, you know, survive this. You have to know how to work your way through it. We're going to listen to you. And it's been a really nice kind of a blending or merger of, you know, Sark and the new coaches and philosophy and last year's group that says we figured out how to survive. We got through everything. I mean, you know, they look at him and say, hell, a year ago Lane Kiffin was our coach. How could this be worse than that? And these kids are pretty – they're amazing, actually, to be honest with you. And they amazed everybody last year. And I think yesterday, you know, Saturday, they amazed everybody once more, you know, who were just sure that this had to be distracting as heck. And turned out they just used it to kind of reinforce who they are and what they want to do and how they want to do it. And they just went out and did it.
And it was a record-setting night, 105 plays. I think that was the consensus. 704 yards. I mean, it's pretty crazy, the numbers that they put up. Cody Kessler almost had 400 yards, four passing touchdowns. He ran one in as well. Got to see him run a little bit there. And so I got to see 11 freshmen play, two freshman starters on the offensive line since they've ever, you know, started keeping stats. They haven't done that before. So plenty of records set for you. Juju Smith, you know, had four catches for 123 yards, which didn't even think he was going to start. He ends up starting there. But a lot of record-setting numbers for – it's Fresno State, but still not a bad way to open the Sark era.
Yeah, that's – I thought coming in, Fresno State is a perfect opener. Is it somebody – you know, they're not some – you know, they're not some FCS school. They're not some really down-in-the-dump school without talent. They're somebody that you had a measuring stick because you played them in the last game last year. They're, you know, they were 11-1 going into that game. They're a proud program, good coach. They're not going to back off. They're going to try to come at you. I like everything about Fresno State as an opener. And again, as Sark said, this is not to put down the people you're playing, but the games are not about your opponent. They have to be about yourself because that's all you have control of. You don't have control of who you're playing. And so your job is to go out and play the way you have to play. And I think the best thing of that part of the week is as much as we saw, you know, the competition for the 3 weeks of camp, we weren't sure because things change in game week preparation. They're not doing the same things. The third team guys are now all scout team guys. And you don't have quite the hurry up in practice because you don't have quite as many plays to get in and things like that. So you don't know. And I thought one of the really keys to how Sark is doing this is early in the week, Ajene Harris was a starter in the slot. And that wasn't the case when game time got here. Juju was on the outside, and Nelson Aguilar was in the slot. And Sark, this is a great answer for a coach. He said the difference was, he said, yes, because he, of course, was asked, why didn't Ajene get a play as much as it looked like he might have? And Sark said, well, the difference was we released the depth chart in the beginning of the week, Sunday. Said, but we kept practicing. And the more we practiced, the more we realized we probably have a better matchup with moving Nelson to the slot and having Juju on the outside. And that's what they did. But what that tells you is just because they had written it down on Sunday or just because whatever, that was the original plan, that didn't change them from watching practice, seeing how things look, and adjusting. And you can't ask for more than that. because, and I'm not saying this is necessarily a competitive issue, but it shows the players practice really matters. What you do in practice really matters. What the coaches do. So they can't be sending better messages than it really matters what goes on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I think that's the exact opposite of the message these kids had 1 year ago when no one knew if anything they did at practice mattered. What a difference. And it's so much easier then to carry on what you do on practice to the game. And that's what they've done so well.
Good job there, Dan. You answered Tarek's question about Ajayne Harris. We were going to talk about that. So, yeah, Steve Sarkisian brought that up yesterday in the conference call. So, Tarek, hopefully that answers your question. But we also had one from John, kind of similar. He's like, any scoop on why George Farmer didn't get as many touches? I thought he was healthy and ready to go, and he could be the most explosive player. I think he's being underutilized, especially in Sark's system. So what do you think about George Farmer and his play?
So maybe they should have thrown 40 passes in the first in the first half. You throw to the guys that are open. For example, I mean, I think if you're somebody coming to watch USC or play USC and you're not sure what they're going to do, and you see George lined up out there, and you think, this kid's 6'1", 220, he's finally healthy. This is the guy who was more touted in high school than Robert Woods and Marquise Lee. We better do something about him. So people can try to take guys out of games. That's why, for example, Nelson's in the slot. That makes it much harder to try to take Nelson out of the game. If you're going to probably not, you know, pay attention quite as much to somebody, it's probably going to be Juju Smith on the other side. And so what you do is you throw the ball to the guy who's open. If those are Juju and Nelson and, you know, Victor and, you know, whoever, that's who you throw the ball to. Now, I know probably for USC fans, it might be hard with the idea that, no, we're going to throw the ball to one guy because he's our guy. That's not the way it works, I don't think. I think, and I would say the word underutilized would be a little bit of a surprise. If you look at that game and say, USC underutilized somebody on offense on a day where they ran 105 plays and gained over 700 yards, and that was slowing the ball down at, you know, the fourth quarter. I wouldn't use the word underutilized with regard to anybody the other day.
No, it's a good point. And George Farmer was in there a lot. He started, so it wasn't like it was different than Ajayne Harris, who we thought was going to start, and then we didn't see him as much. But we did see a whole lot of George Farmer. He was out there, just didn't get as many balls as, you know, Juju Smith only caught four passes. They just were big ones, you know. But that's still great for a true freshman.
If you find Juju and he's open and he's got, let's say, a decent amount of space, now you're one guy on defense, and if you miss your shoestring tackle, he's going to run a long way. And that's what happens. I mean, you just try to find those little mismatches where they've kind of dropped off and they're maybe trying to pay a little more attention to Nelson in the slot. And there's Juju, kind of got a bunch of space, and he catches it. And if you're the corner and you come up and miss, he's going to run a long way. And that's just what they're looking for. If that happens with George, I guarantee you, if George would have been where Juju was, George would have gotten those passes.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. And this other question kind of follows along with that, because this is where a spot I think you could use George Farmer a little bit more. Earl in West L.A. wants to know is, why do we have Nelson Aguilar returning all kicks? We seem to have lots of talented players who would be handling this chore instead of our number one receiver. And to me, Dan, I think Farmer's perfect for returning kickoffs there with his straight line speed. But get your thoughts on that, too.
Oh, he will. Yeah, he will be. And I think coaches tend to be conservative a little bit. And I'm sure Nelson would like to be out there on every. He'd like to cover kickoffs and punts. So much less return them. I think that'll evolve over time as we get, more comfortable with everything that they're doing. But you can see in an opener how you might do that. Yeah, I was surprised a little bit with Nelson back there, but that may not stay that way. We'll see. But Nelson really is a threat, obviously. But then, so is George and so are Juju. I think they'll refine what they're doing on kickoff return. I think they need to see a game or two and get the personnel down. But you're right. Yeah, George on a straight ahead ball. He's not necessarily your punt returner, but on that straight ahead kickoff where he can get a head of steam up and they can try to, create the seam at a particular spot, on the wherever the 24 yard line or whatever, and try to get him there. He'd be the guy you'd want to do that. So because he can run by people and run over them, and that's kind of a good combination, and run through them.
Yeah, it's not like they returned the kick. They had a lot of chances. I mean, not a lot of chances to return kickoffs in that game, but didn't. It wasn't the best. I guess you'd say their best effort there. It just didn't seem like they were able to break anything open. Everything just was kind of like short kickoff returns and nothing really special there.
No, but I will say, if we want to use the word underutilized, we talk about they didn't get to do much on their kickoff returns. I think Chris Alvarado was the most underutilized player on the team. The USC punter who got zero punts, unfortunately, is as good a job as he's been doing this year. Poor kid shows up and doesn't get a punt the ball one. Now he knows how Tommy Malone felt some of those years when he was averaging 49 yards plus a punt and wasn't able to even qualify for the NCAA leadership because he didn't get the punt at all.
Yeah, well, we'll probably see Chris Alvarado against Stanford, but who knows? We'll see about that. Speaking of Stanford, though, Melvin had a question. I'm kind of paraphrasing this for him, but he thought USC looked good on defense everywhere except in the run game. Run game defense, it's times, not the whole time, but at times. Is that a possible weak point for this team? He thinks they need to get better there to play against Stanford.
Well, I think it was a hard deal. I think they basically played three guys on a rush. They weren't going to let Fresno throw the ball. They weren't going to blitz. I mean, Fresno, for example, two different approaches. Fresno ran every blitz, every stunt, every kind of overload and all that that a defensive team could run. USC ran like nothing. Okay, so what we've seen all year has been guys on the move on defense. I mean, really moving and running to the ball. And so they go out there Saturday, and they're pretty standstill, pretty much vanilla, pretty much just kind of we'll just be in our really base defense, but I mean really. And the number of times you saw guys flying around and all that, it just didn't happen much. They were just that did not look like how they've done it much of the year, and I don't think it's going to look like how they did it against Stanford. But I do think if kids are used to really flying around on defense, and then you get them in a kind of a holding pattern a little bit, which you can absolutely understand. I mean, I don't think Stanford has any idea right now. I mean, they played Washington last year, but not with these players. So, I think Stanford's going to have to guess as to what is USC going to throw at them. And I think that was the way to go in this game. But I think at times, maybe the linebackers were back on their heels a little bit, and at times they were, just overly cautious, and they gave up a couple of drives, but I thought they played the run pretty decently for the circumstances they found themselves in with what they were going to allow themselves to do. I think it probably hurt them in their tackling a little bit too, because they weren't quite running to the football the way they have been all of August. We'll see next week, but I think it will look a little bit differently, and I don't think I'd jump overboard on, kind of a negative reaction to what you saw Saturday.
Marcel had a question about, in his opinion, he said the field looked like it was in poor condition. What happened? It looked better during the spring game. However, the offense looked real good. What do you think about how the field looked?
Yeah, I think you're wrong on that. I mean, I don't know if you're talking about looking on television or looking in the stands. They did put one new section of grass in between like the 15 and the 22 or whatever on the opposite the peristyle end of the stadium for something. They must have had something in the stadium that kind of gashed the turf there when we saw them for the first scrimmage. So they put a whole new section of turf that was lighter in color. And I swear, it almost looked like they matched the grass color with that color. But whatever you thought maybe of the way it looked, they take really good care of that turf. That turf is in the best shape we've ever seen it. And it's a wonderful playing surface. So however it may have looked, it didn't have the patches. It was really good, level, even, playing surface. So that's one of the benefits of USC taking over, the care of the field. I mean, one of the differences you notice is the game's over and they are out there while we're in the press box. You can hear, they're out there working on that grass and they've got, all the, equipment going and that. And that wasn't the case, in years past. So I don't know. The turf is not. I don't think it's going to get all beaten up, and I don't think it's going to be a problem. And it's, it's everything you'd want, I think, in that field. So no, not the case.
Okay. Let's see. Boyd and San Ramon had a question, and I looked at the depth chart. The USC released the depth chart on Sunday. It said Jalen Jones is listed as a second string cornerback. Can I get some info about him? How has he looked at practice? And I'm like, is this a USC question? I'm like, who the heck is that? And I looked, I'm like, oh, yeah, he is one of the walk-ons that's listed as the backup there over at one of the cornerback spots. I don't even know if you recognize the name, Dan, but maybe you do, but I just wanted to check in.
I've looked for him, and we don't get to see him as much when they go into in the scout team because – unlike in the past, the scout guys come out wearing their scout jerseys already. So then we don't really know who they are. But I have looked at him. He's a good-looking athlete. I mean, he looks like he belongs out there. Honestly, no one – I don't think we've talked to him, and I don't think anybody's asked about him. But he's an example of they've done an unbelievable job with walk-ons. Coach Baxter and Coach Orgeron were a big part of that last year, and a lot of what they've done with walk-ons for this year, was happening last year. But it's amazing. I mean, you're talking about a team that's probably, if they dressed 104 or 105 the other night, they got 57, originally recruited, scholarship players available. You're talking about a lot of walk-ons. And I guess they had at least three first-time walk-ons play. Matt Lopes and Teddy Baker played. Who else? I'm trying to think of the other walk-ons who played.
Well, Chris Wilson played, but he's played before.
Tolan played.
Yeah, Tolan.
At least three walk-ons played. And then obviously Connor Sullivan, the holder, who's doing a great job. But it's an amazing thing when you have, a private school with the, tuition situation, USC. These aren't kids, that are attending, a state school like, Nebraska for, minimal dollars. This is a major accomplishment of this program is the walk-on program.
And then, so he's listed as Chris Hawkins' backup. But if you look at Kevon Seymour's side, Adoree Jackson's in there. So if something happened to Kevon Seymour or Chris Hawkins, Adoree Jackson's going in. It's not like Jalen Jones would go in before Adoree Jackson if Chris Hawkins went down, for example.
Well, but and then Ryan Dillard's been injured.
Ryan Dillard's been hurt.
So he would be in there.
Yeah.
And Devin Shelton has been hurt.
Right.
That week lined up. But there's also
Jonathan Lockett and Lamont Simmons, who I think, I don't think those guys played, right, Dan?
No, Lockett did, and I'd have to double check on Simmons. I think Lockett definitely did. He was one of the 11.
Okay, so he was.
Yeah,
one
so
of
Lockett
the...
was in there. So yeah, this is where we probably tell people don't study the depth chart like it's the map to Pharaoh's tomb or something, and you got to follow every single step. It's an approximation at best, and I know somebody asked Sark last night on the conference call, as if there was some big secret as to what happened to a Jenny Harris, and it's just don't take it so seriously. Practice happened, as Sark said, and things change, and you're probably not well advised to something you decided on Sunday that you're going to stick to the next Saturday. I would put a lot more, I'd pay a lot more attention to the depth chart this year than last year, or than at the beginning of last year, but I still wouldn't put so much, attention to it that like a deviation from the depth chart is like some big deal.
All right. We got one last one for you, Dan, before we let you go. Marcel and Diamond Bar. This is kind of off topic of the game, but I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Quick question on what would happen if USC created its own network like Texas instead of waiting for the Pac-12 and DirecTV?
I don't think they can. I think they're locked in for, 10 more years? I think it was 12.
Yeah, some crazy amount.
So I think 10 more years of whatever USC does TV broadcast-wise, they would get no dollars. All dollars have to go through the Pac-12. So if USC set one of those up, the Pac-12 would get all the money. And you're saying, gosh, that doesn't sound like a good deal. Really? You think? Plus, they'd have to have a broadcast partner. The way those are working with the SEC and the Longhorn and what have you, they basically have to get, Fox or ESPN as a partner. And I'm not sure. I mean, if you could guarantee them, USC would be back to where it was, right away. And for the length of the contract, yeah, you probably could get a partner. But how you could ever do that, I don't think you would. I think USC is locked into the Pac-12, forever. And yeah, it hurts when the Pac-12 still isn't on DirecTV. And the SEC is going, yeah, we are, and you aren't. And DirecTV, and the Pac-12 is lobbing insults at DirecTV, and DirecTV lobs back and says, no, they just signed up with the SEC, and they said, no, this is a much more reasonable partner who asked us for reasonable fees that we can send it out to our listeners without, damaging them, financially. And we're not like, the SEC is not like the Pac-12, according to DirecTV. So that one has gone nowhere. Two years now of insults being thrown back and forth between the Pac-12 and DirecTV. And you almost wish a school could do something about it. But they're locked. USC is locked into the Pac-12 network. And the Pac-12 apparently is locked out of DirecTV. So.
We'll see.
Changed there.
Yeah, Larry Scott was hoping for AT&T to buy DirecTV to fix that, but that's not exactly the greatest strategy in the world to make you feel comfortable about it.
And it's not a guarantee, even if that happens, that it would get changed either. So neither part of that. That's like that's really trying to draw three cards for an inside straight or something. I think that the chances of that happening are slim and none, and we know we're none just left down or whatever. I don't know.
All right. Well, Dan, great stuff. We appreciate you coming on. We're going to make some room here on the podcast for Coach Harvey Hyde in the next segment. But thanks for answering all those questions, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Look forward to it.
All right. Everyone else, hey, back in a minute. We're going to talk to Coach Harvey Hyde, get his thoughts on USC Fresno State.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concerts, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We're back here on the Peristyle Podcast, joined by the coach, Harvey Hyde, who's been all over the place talking about this USC-Fresno State game. So we're glad that he can join our show as well. Talk about it there. He's been on ESPN Radio here in Los Angeles quite a bit, does the Sunday brunch show the next morning, talking about what happened at USC-Fresno State. Well, welcome, coach. How you doing?
Thank you very much, Ryan. Good morning, everyone. Happy Labor Day. Enjoy it. Drive carefully. And as I always say, huddle up and buckle up. As you go along, you probably aren't listening to the car. Maybe you might be. A lot of people are doing the streaming now, and it's absolutely fantastic what you can do now with all these electronic devices. I don't know how to do that, but everything is great, Ryan.
Yeah, we got a lot of people listening in the car, coach. They put it on their iPods or wherever, you know, their device. They can put it on their phone. They could listen at the gym. So we get people listening to this podcast all over the place, all over the country, all over the world, in many different spots and how they do it. So we appreciate that. We're really happy to be on iTunes and have been going for 6+ years now. So we're going to keep it going and thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets. SCTickets.com is the website, or call them at 1-800-888-7287. Dodgers and Angels both doing well. If you want to see them or anybody else across the country, you can check it out. Of course, USC's playing Stanford next weekend up on the farm. But we want to talk about this game, coach, and just kind of get your overall thoughts of how USC looked opening the Steve Sarkisian era.
Well, Ryan, first of all, I want to say it was great seeing you on Saturday.
Oh, you as well.
Over at the stage.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to say I want to thank you for the opportunity of doing this 2014 season with you. We go year-round. I want to thank all of our listeners out there for joining us and thanking us. When I see everyone, they come up to me and they say, or you, I know people are talking to you too about the podcast and they can't wait to listen to it. And we just look forward to doing it, and we want to thank you for listening. And you can follow us at Coach Harvey Hyde. That's at Coach Harvey Hyde. And Ryan, give yours out too, because you were doing a lot of tweeting during the game.
I was, yeah. At Inside Troy is mine, and as Coach said, at Coach Harvey Hyde. Coach is more of a take a quarter at a time sort of approach. I'm like tweeting like a madman during the game.
Well, let me tell you, with this hurry-up offense now, I scout every play during the game. I just like I was scouting if we were going to play them the old way. If you're an old coach out there, you know how you do it: left hash, right hash, middle of the field, down distance. And then I'm able to follow it, and I go back and recap the game, and I'm able to get more of a feel of what happened when I'm not distracted as far as moving ahead. So it was a little harder this week. It was a little harder as far as the 105 plays that they ran offensively, but I got them all in. And that first drive I thought was really a great impression. 18 plays, 85 yards. Touchdown for USC. Game management, Ryan, that's what I like to look at, game management, like play calling. No delay of game, especially after a timeout. No wasted plays. No players running around not knowing where to line up. Field management on the sidelines and enthusiasm, I thought, was great. Just those type of little things, I think, tell you a lot about a football team. And I was able to do that. There's a lot of other things we could talk about. I know one thing I'll ask you, and I don't know how many people noticed this, but what was the change that you saw on the SC uniform? Do you remember?
The black socks. Is that
right.
What you're talking about?
Okay. Well, I'm a white Sox guy, but I'll tell you what. If you keep playing like that, you wear any color you want.
Yeah, Dan Weber wasn't really happy with it. I didn't get to talk to him about it, but the black socks, he's not a big fan of. To me, I mean, it doesn't bother me a whole lot. Did you like those, coach, or not really?
Well, I'm a White Sox guy, but okay. Kids today like little changes, and I like the traditional thing. Okay,
me too.
I like
do.
The White Sox. I just like the traditional thing. But Coach Sarkisian gave the team the option to vote on it. They voted on it, and of course, when it is, the kids know how the vote gets. You know, you can't say, oh, man, White Sox won, and they all ask each other, what'd you vote, man? And they said, I voted for black, and they can't find anybody voting for white. So if you're going to vote on something, you better come up with the right answer.
Cool. Well, let's jump into some questions, Coach. We'll be a way to talk about the game and get your thoughts. We got some good ones this week. Kevin in South Orange County, you talk about that first drive, Coach. To me, the most impressive thing was converting on all those third downs, something that USC hadn't done in the past. And Kevin has a question about that. He said, fun times at the game yesterday. Thought the team looked good. Was happy to see the rotation on both lines. The biggest stat for me was third down conversions. 11 of 16 is pretty good. They moved the chains on long third downs. I'm concerned about the ability to get that done versus team with more skill on defense like Stanford. Any thoughts from Coach on what he's expecting this week on the third down front? Kevin in South Orange County.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know what to expect really, but I do know that USC has a short yardage offense. If you watch during the game when they went on fourth down twice with a quarterback sneak, they ran out of the huddle and they had a T formation and they ran a wedge and got their first down. I like that. I like those type of things. They prepared it. I don't want to say I don't think this is anything new because Stanford, of course, watches all the game films. In fact, they exchange films, videos on Sunday morning, so it's not any secrets. And they look at last year what Steve did at Washington. But he has a short yardage offense that he works on the goal line, and it's power. It's like I used to call breaker, breaker, breaker. And when they heard breaker, 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 they knew that we were going to be in double tight, three tight ends, sometimes unbalanced, and we were going to pound it in there, and we were going to get that short yardage. So against Stanford, you're going to see a very physical front. It's not going to be quite as physical as last year, but I want you to know they've got a lot of great players back. They've learned how to win. They've been the four straight BCS bowl games. They're not happy about what happened last year. I think they really didn't care about the Davis game. They went out and played it and won it. Davis wasn't a big, opponent for them. But I think they're going to be very well disciplined, very well coached. They've got a new defensive coordinator, Mason, the old defensive coordinator, is now at Vandy. They've got both kickers back who really average well, 18 of 22 field goals, 42.9 yards, averaging punting. I think the linebackers is the strength of the defense currently right now, as they're led by Tarpley, and Martinez and Davis will get back in there. So they're deep with talent. They've got the two starting corners back that have played in a lot of bowl games. And I just think with Henry Anderson back, number 91, he was injured last year. He's a great all-conference linebacker. He really is. And Perry's back, the starting nose guard. They've got a lot of players coming back with a lot of rotation. And, you know, when you played in big games, you get used to winning. I think in big games, I know they were 11-3 last year. I can't remember over the years, but I think these guys have learned to win. Like I don't want to throw stats out that aren't correct. But Hogan has played in big games, and he's something like 10-3 against BCS opponents. So he looks forward to these type of games. SC's looking forward to these type of games. It's at Stanford. I would say this game and the Michigan State-Oregon game are two highlighted football games in the entire country this week. So there's a lot of great anticipation on this football game, especially the USC people that will be going up to Stanford. This has been a hurdle, this team and USC, over the past 5 or 6 years. So it's very important that the Trojans go up there, and I think the key is the offensive line. You know, everybody talks about this all the time. Ty Montgomery is one of the top players in the Pac-12. Kevin Hogan is a better quarterback than what people give him credit for. Pete is one of the best offensive linemen in the country, and they might have one of the best offensive lines in the country. But you know what this is going to match up? I would say probably the best offensive line in the country and probably the best defensive line in the country. Now, I don't know if that makes sense or not. But that's where you win or lose football games, Ryan. So I've talked too much on Stanford. I apologize. Don't give me that opportunity anymore, okay?
No, that's okay. We're all right. We're going to talk. There's some questions that are looking ahead to Stanford, too, but we want to talk about Fresno, of course. Lamar, let's go to Lamar in Lancaster. He said it was a great way to start the season after looking at only the first week of college football, but reflecting on the last 6 years, I've come to conclude that out of 124 teams, only about 15 teams play defense well enough to be highly competitive, and even those teams cannot totally stop the new hybrid offenses of today's game. In today's game, he's talking about Saturday's game, you have to outscore, oh, I guess, you know, in general today, you have to outscore your opponent and try to reasonably manage the opposition on defense. Sark's coaching style allows the Trojans to step into the modern era of college football while keeping the team in every game. What is your take on that? That's Lamar in Lancaster.
Well, you do. You have to be very athletic on defense. With the hurry-up offense, your players are getting more reps, your great players, and that's what SC is doing now. You have more opportunity of scoring. And you do. You have to be very athletic on defense. And, you know, one thing about Stanford, they have been able to defeat teams like that. They really have. They're so physical that, you know, over the last – Oregon hadn't been able to beat Stanford. UCLA hasn't been able to beat Stanford. A team that beat Stanford in the Rose Bowl was another physical type of football team like they were. But you don't see many of these teams any longer that are power type of offenses or real physical type of defenses like Stanford is. But they really put a rush on you. I think that's where people forget. They have great defensive ends, a tough nose guard, and they really come after you. They put a lot of pressure on you. So they put you in a lot of second and tens and third and eights, and they throw your rhythm off. But I agree that the hurry-up offense is something that almost everybody in the country is running. And, in fact, when you turn on the other games and you watch them, everybody's running it. Yeah, you don't see any teams that start running it. Everybody's running the hurry-up offense now. So it's something you have to learn to play against, and also defense, which you're doing it every day in practice. Now, see, this week, as far as USC preparing for Stanford, they don't see Stanford. They haven't worked on this type of offense the entire spring or the entire fall camp. And, Ryan, you've been there, and I've been there at fall camp. They haven't gone against any power eye teams, this type of offense where – you have a lot of, and this year I think they'll go back to what they did, having big tight ends, three tight ends in the game at one time as far as receivers or tight blocking. You don't prepare. You're going to have, they're not practicing today, so you got Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday to get ready for Stanford and their offense, and you travel on Friday. So you have 3 days to get ready for what Stanford does. So it's something that, in fact, in the post-game interview, Leonard Williams made a comment about it. He wished they had more time to play against more physical football teams to get ready for Stanford. I don't know if you heard that comment or not, but he was wishing, Ryan, he'd play this. They'd have this game later.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of these players have that in the back of their mind, though, because they ran against it. You know, USC and Stanford would run something similar, so. I mean, you know, it was more – it wasn't the hurry-up style. It was the style that USC kind of ran offensively last year. So I think the players that have been around, Coach, have got it. You know, they've done it before. They just haven't done it this year, I guess you could say.
Well, you know, when I look back at 2013, the most points that were scored on Stanford is 28 points. Arizona State scored 28. Arizona State was beaten by Stanford 42-28, and Washington scored 28 points. That's the most points that were scored on them the entire year.
That's interesting. But you know, USC obviously ended up beating them, not scoring that many points, but with 11, you know, 12 or 13 guys on defense, was able to shut Stanford down. So, I think that these guys have some confidence, Coach, just because they know they did it last year. Scheme's a little bit different, but not having anyone to sub in, they still played Stanford really tough.
Oh, they really did. Stanford only got 17 points against USC last year. 20-17 was the score. So, no, they're confident. It's not that they're not confident, and they'll be ready to play. It's just being able to see what they do, you know, in 3 days and be ready for it.
Yeah, great point there. All right, let's see. Mike in Quartz Hill had a question. After watching him score his touchdown, what do you think of Soma Vanuku as short yardage or goal line tailback? It seems to me that he has the ability to move the pile like Lendale White did.
Well, I agree with you 100%. When he found that seam, broke to the outside and got in the secondary, the other two guys said, I'm not tackling him, are you? He had the steamroll, and he went into the end zone, and he just looked great. He looks faster, and he looks really determined to get where he's headed. He took advantage of the call, and I think he looked awesome in making that play. You know, he's a great kid, and he's a great player, and he plays on special teams, and he's a leader. And I'm glad he got that touchdown. I really am, and I'm glad he made that run.
Yeah, with only two scholarship tailbacks, Coach, he was really like the next guy in. We saw James Tolan the fourth come in and get a lot of playing time. But I think you might see a little more Somo Vinukau in those situations. I mean, if Trey Madden can't go, it's not like they have a whole bunch of other scholarship tailbacks they can lean on.
No, but I think the bulk of the carries, I think Buck Allen proved it Saturday. And I'm just, this is my opinion.
Yeah.
That he's a force, okay, and he's going. You can see how they push the pile when he runs the football. I mean, you don't just knock him down the pile. And I was impressed with the offensive linemen and their push on that type of run that Buck Allen did. He was in the crowd and people were pushing him forward. I think Buck Allen is a type of kid that's going to be a force. It's funny, you know. Justin Davis had he always looks good. I like Justin Davis a lot, but. James Tolan, who I've been talking about and you've been talking about, everybody's watched him in camp. He rushed for more yards than Justin Davis did.
Yeah.
On the same amount of carries. So, you know, the cupboards aren't bare. You know, the cupboards aren't bare. And when your number is called, we talk about it all the time. It's time for somebody to step up or the next play, you're in there. You know, keep your helmet on, like I say.
Makes sense. Let's go to Ben, Coach. He said, to a layman, it felt as though Oregon played FSU at the Coliseum, so he means Fresno State. Just so you know, Fresno State is not FSU. They're Fresno State. So, but me covering them, I've been told that before many times. But people still say FSU, but it's Fresno State at the Coliseum. So he said it looked like Oregon was playing Fresno State. The pace, the play signs, the unbalanced line, etc. Without using labels like read option and pro style. What are the important differences between USC's 2014 offense and that of Oregon? That's from Ben.
Well, you know, you saw a very vanilla USC offense. You didn't see the entire offense. They ran the same basic plays over and over and over. They didn't want to show exactly their entire offense for Stanford, and I'm not going to go into what their entire offense is. But they ran the basic run plays over and over and over. They didn't. Well, you know, they didn't get any counters or fly sweeps, and everybody know they have all this stuff. The keeps, when they ran the keeps, Cody went right into the end zone. I don't know how many of those they're planning on running, but they got to teach the quarterbacks how to slide. I'll tell you, Cody almost tore his knee up one time, and Max Brown, man, I'll tell you, Max, come on, buddy. Let's get your running. Let's practice that option. You know, get out there. He had a lot of room, and he didn't slide properly, and somebody could get hurt that way. But, Washington, USC has not developed their offense. If you went back and you can remember what they did last year, they do all kinds of different things. They'll add to it. So they're just starting their season. They're vanilla. They played well against. Didn't want mistakes. They didn't have mistakes. The game management was perfect. No delay of the games. I mean, these are the things you try to do in your opening football game of the season. You have 105 yards. You have one Damian Mama jumps offside, but that wasn't his fault. The official moved the ball. Please, Mr. Referee, or please, Mr. Umpire, you know that was your fault, picking up the ball, moving it back, and Mama was just moving back so he wouldn't be offsides. But they, you know, they didn't give that to him. They had a couple of legal procedures, and the rest of it was great. A couple of guys blocked in the back and a couple of those quick screens out to the outside, but that's the way you learn. But, you know, no personal fouls, no late hits. And I thought that Cody ran the management that when he didn't have a guy open, he didn't throw the ball in the crowd. He threw the ball out of bounds. These are the little things you look at as far as in your first game. But, of course, you got to come back and you got to correct the things that weren't good. And that they probably already showed that to the team. And, you know, on defense, too, they had a couple of lapses there. And, I think a couple of let-ups during the third quarter and when they had some drives there. But those things will all be ironed out, and we'll see what happens. It was a hot day.
It definitely was a hot day. The Black Sox probably didn't help, Coach. Those White Sox might have been a little better. Well, let's go to Patrick. He said he watched the game a couple of times. Great win. Haven't seen control and poise by a USC quarterback since Matt Leinart. So that's pretty high praise there for Cody Kessler. Don't want to nitpick, but I'm a bit worried about Stanford's running game. Our linebackers seemed like they were a little too easily blocked, late to fill in holes, or in the wrong position. What are your thoughts on how they'll do against the big boys of Stanford, and if they'll do anything differently? That's from Patrick.
Well, yeah, they you know, our USC's linebackers are a little bit undersized. What I mean by that, they're speed type of backers to play against the spread. And Stanford loves to pull their guard, lead their fullback, get in sometimes three-back sets, get in a power set, and run right at your linebackers. Run ISO. It used to be called blast ISO. Now it's power off tackle. And if you close it down to the inside and pinch your guys, the guy just automatically breaks to the outside, and the fullback's taught, don't lead through, lead around and block the end, hook the end. And the guard knows, too, when he's pulling, if there's no space to run inside, run outside. So they know how to run that as good as anywhere in the country. So the linebackers, yeah, you have to protect your linebackers. And your linebackers, and you'll do that by slanting, pinching, doing different things, close off the inside where your backers have a chance for the outside. Now, they don't have a Gaffney. They don't have a Gaffney who's a real strong running back, but they have three backs that will probably rotate in there, Sanders and a couple of these other guys. So they're speedy guys, and I don't know if the line will give them a push, but I don't know if they have the power that Gaffney had. So the backers will have to probably fill the outside, and they'll take care of the inside with the defensive line. But you don't want them ISOing or blasting your linebackers, because your linebackers are just a little bit too undersized, and they'll have an advantage there.
All right, one last one for you, Coach. Earl in West L.A., there are a lot of things to be excited about tonight, but now is the time to get ready for Stanford. This question is for Coach Harvey Hyde. Obviously, Stanford cannot allow the Trojans to run 105 offensive plays for over 700 yards. If you were David Shaw, how would you scheme to keep this Trojan offense off the field? That's Earl, West L.A.
Well, you know, the way you keep them off the field is you hold the football. The best defense is a great offense that keeps the other team off the field. They've been able to do this against UCLA. They've been able to do this against Oregon. You know, when you look at the scores that these teams have, number of points that these guys have scored against Stanford, it's not very many. Last year, UCLA got 10 points. Oregon, who's a real high-scoring team, got 20 points. And the reason why is because they have the ball the whole game. Time of possession, Stanford. Time of possession, Stanford. So what happens when you come in, and Stanford plays great sound defense, that you press a little bit. But you press a little bit on offense because you want to make plays so you can catch up if you're behind. But sometimes that hurts you. So the best defense against a spread offense like USC, Oregon, the rest of them, is ball control on offense. Just, you don't get the ball. So you can't run as many plays. You just don't get the ball. Stanford will drive the ball, try to drive the ball 40 yards, 50 yards, play field position. And then when they get in the red zone, of course, kick a field goal. The field goal kicker kicked well last year, 18-22. And they'll try to ball control you. So that's the whole idea of the Stanford defense, is to play great defense, but let the offense have the ball the whole game. So if you can stop their offense, now they have a problem, because they have to face your offense more and more and more. So basically, I would think that's the answer to that question.
All right. Well, Coach, great stuff. We appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts. Man, are people looking forward to this USC-Stanford game. Can't blame them. I mean, some great stuff coming up here, and really interesting to see how these Trojans play with the high-powered 105-play offense versus the toughness that Stanford, that everyone knows, man. It's going to be really fun.
Well, you can tell, Ryan, I'm ready to do the pregame show already, and today's only Monday.
Yeah.
You can tell I'm ready. I've given it some thought, and I know exactly what's going through everybody's minds. I'm playing it as a coach, but I'd be thinking about all weekend and with my staff, and thinking about what we have to do, our strengths against their strengths, and our weaknesses that we have to cover up for their strengths, and all of that. And David Shaw is doing the same thing up there at Palo Alto. So This is what great college football is all about. Are you going up to the game, Ryan?
I am not. Dan Weber will be up there. We'll have photographers up there, too. But I'm going to be covering it from here, so I'll be home.
I'll be doing the same thing. I'll do the pregame show from the studio. That's because I have the postgame show on the Las Vegas station immediately following the game. And then Sunday morning I have the Trojan brunch from the studio. So it doesn't really allow me to travel with the Trojans. But I'll be watching it. And for all of you out there, have a great Labor Day weekend. Have a great week. It's a short one. Stanford will be here shortly. It's an early game, too, Ryan. It's a 12:30 kick.
Yeah, crazy.
12:30 kick. So that's another thing. You know, when you have an early kick like that and you travel, that takes less time away from your preparation.
All right. Well, great stuff, Coach. We appreciate you coming on. Everyone else, thank you so much for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. USC Stanford coming up next. We'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.